Okay, all right, today we're going to continue our discussion of hash tables as a way to represent the dictionary data structure. We saw in our last lecture what a hash table was. You essentially have an array of buckets. You need a hash function which maps from keys into bucket indexes. And you need an overflow handling mechanism. Okay. We saw the most popular hash function in our last lecture, namely division. And today we're going to focus on overflow handling mechanisms. All right, as we noted in our last lecture, an overflow occurs when the home bucket for a new pair that is being inserted is full. Okay, so now we need to find an alternative bucket into which this pair can be placed. Now, there are different strategies for handling this. The first one would be to simply perform a search in the hash table in some fashion, trying to find an alternative empty bucket and then place the new pair into that bucket. Okay. And examples of search methods which can be used in this context, one is linear probing. This is something we'll talk about in some detail today. It's another method called quadratic probing that we will not talk about, and random probing that we shall also not talk about. Okay. The quadratic and random probing methods are methods that are described in some detail on our website. If you go under enrichment, you will find there's a whole section there on hashing, which talks about alternative hash functions. So besides division, there are a whole bunch of other hash functions people tend to use, but they're not as often. These are described in that section. Also on different overflow handling mechanisms, for example, quadratic probing, random probing, rehashing, and so on. Okay. All right, but we are going to talk about the first of these today, linear probing. The second strategy is basically to eliminate overflows altogether by making a bucket size essentially infinite, and that means that in each bucket you keep a linear list of all pairs for which it's the home bucket. So you keep a linear list of synonyms in that bucket. Okay. All right, so the bucket capacity is essentially infinite. Okay. And in this context, one could have each bucket be an array linear list of synonyms or a chain of synonyms. And we'll talk in some length about the chain scheme also today. Okay. All right, so let's start by taking a look at linear probing. The essential strategy here is you still stay with the bucket size one idea. Each bucket in your table can hold exactly one pair. And if the home bucket is full, then we're going to look for another bucket in the table, which happens to be empty at this time. Okay. All right, so let's look at an example of this. We'll use a table that has 17 buckets in it. The hash function is the division function we talked about in our last lecture. And here is our hash table. Buckets index 0 through 16, so that's 17 buckets all told. And we're going to put into this hash table pairs with the keys given over here. Okay. All right, so we're going to start by putting in a pair whose key is 6, then we put in a pair whose key is 12, then 34, and so on. So when we're handling the pair with key 6, we compute its home bucket. So that's 6 mod 17, which is 6. So this pair has to go into bucket 6, which is this one. That bucket does have space in it. It's empty, and it can hold one pair, so we can put the pair in. And in fact, we do put it there. It goes into its home bucket. Then you examine the next pair. Its key is 12. 12 mod 17 is 12, so that's the home bucket. It's empty, and the pair goes into its home bucket. The next one is 34. 34 mod 17 is a 0, so that's the home bucket. The home bucket is empty, and that's where it goes. Okay. All right, so far we're doing pretty good. Everything is going in the home bucket. You come across this 29. 29 mod 17 is a 12. The home bucket is in use. Okay. All right, so we can't really put the pair there. There isn't any space. In linear probing, what you do is you start from the home bucket and move towards the right, looking for the first vacant bucket. And when I say look towards the right, you actually view this as being a circular array. So it's really more like you make a clockwise movement. So you'd go and look at position 13, then 14, 15, 16, and then you would wrap around here to 0 and continue looking for the first empty bucket. Now, in this case, beginning from here, the first empty bucket is this one. And this is where we will place the new pair. Okay. All right, next comes the pair whose key is 28. 28 mod 17 is an 11. That bucket is empty, and so it goes into its home bucket. Okay. All right, then we examine this fellow. 11 mod 17 is an 11. Its home bucket just got occupied. So we really can't place this fellow here. Okay. To find the place for this new pair, we examine buckets beginning from the home bucket and moving clockwise in our circular view of the array until we encounter the first empty bucket, which would be this one here, bucket number 14. Okay. All right, so that's where it goes. Okay. All right, moving on to the next key, 23. 23 mod 17 is a 6. This is bucket 6. Again, that's occupied. You look for the next available bucket, which would be this one here, bucket 7. All right, that's kind of unfortunate because just then our next fellow is 7, and 7's home bucket is 7, which just got occupied, so you can't place it in the home bucket. You look for the next available bucket, it's number 8, and that's where it goes. Okay. Then comes 0. You compute its home bucket, that's occupied, so you put in the next available one. 33, home bucket is 16, which is vacant, so we're in luck out there. Comes number key 30, and the home bucket, 30 mod 17, is a 13. That's occupied, unfortunately. So we look for the next available bucket that's over there, and that's where it goes. All right, finally comes the 45. 45 mod 17, that's an 11, which is over here. And that bucket's occupied, and actually we have to go quite far before we can find an available bucket. So this one's occupied, number 13 is occupied, 14, 15, 16. We wrap around and we come over here as the first available bucket. Okay. All right, and that's where it goes. Okay. All right, so in linear probing, you start at the home bucket, and you move clockwise from there, looking for the first available bucket, and that's where the new entry goes. In case, in this examination, you return all the way back to the home bucket, that would tell you that the hash table is full. There are no available buckets. All right, so that's how the put operation works, and once you know how the put works, you can figure out how the get works. If someone was to come in and say, find me the element corresponding to the key 45, well, you would first compute the home bucket for 45, which is an 11, and then we'd check if this bucket is empty. It's not, so we'd compare the key 28 against 45. It's not a match. We go to the next fellow, compare the key here. It's not a match. You go over here, and you keep comparing until you either find what you're looking for, okay, and in this case we do find it here after making a large number of compares, or if you were looking for something different, perhaps you'd fall off the end of this cluster, reaching an empty spot without having located what you're looking for, in which case you would know that the element you're looking for isn't present. Okay. All right, so for example, if we were let's say searching for a 25, okay, then we would go through the same sequence of, let's see, 25, now let's try 28, 28 is taken, 45 is taken, let's go to the next one, 45 plus 17, which would be a 62. Okay, so if you're searching for a 62, you would start at the home bucket, which is here, okay, and then you would compare the keys, they're not the same, you'd go to the next one and keep going through this cluster until you arrive at the end of the cluster, which is 45, no match, and then you kind of reach this empty bucket and you'll find that there's no 62, okay? And if you actually had to insert the 62, that's where you would put it in, okay? All right, so in linear open addressing, to put an item in, you compute its home bucket, you define a cluster to be a contiguous set of occupied buckets beginning at the home bucket. You search the cluster to make sure you don't already have a pair with this key. If you don't, then you're at the end of the cluster, and it's at the cluster end where you place the new pair. Okay. Okay. Well, let's take a look at the remove operation. The remove operation is a bit tricky in, when linear probing is used. Okay. All right, suppose you're to remove the pair whose key is 0, okay, which means this guy. Okay. The first thing you need to do, of course, is to locate it. So we run the get algorithm, or essentially the get algorithm, which means you start at the home bucket, you compute 0 mod 17, so you start over here, and then you search the cluster. Okay. If you reach the cluster end and you kind of fall off here at the empty area, then you know there is no pair whose key is 0. On the other hand, if you find a match, so for example here, searching the cluster, it's not a match here, it's a match over here. So we found the pair that is to be removed. Okay. And because once you remove it, it's not enough to just walk away, because the 0 was found in the middle of a cluster. So if you're found in the middle of a cluster, then people that come after you in the cluster may no longer be findable using our get algorithm. Okay. So for example, if you look at the 45, when someone comes to search for a 45, you'll start at its home bucket, which is here, and you're going to keep going until you reach the cluster end. And this would now tell you that we've reached the cluster end, and we would not really go to look for the 45 over here. Okay. All right, so to fix this problem, which is that our get doesn't work if all we do is remove the pair from here, we need to search the rest of the cluster, moving back people who otherwise would not be found. Okay, so I take a look at the 45, and by computing its home bucket, I figure out that 45's home bucket is actually towards the left, and therefore this fellow needs to be moved there so that you actually will find 45 in a future search. All right, so I moved the 45 back, so now I have a vacant spot over here, but that's the cluster end. There's nobody else that has to be moved, so I'm kind of done with this remove. Okay, well, let's take a look at another example. We're removing a 34, so that's over here. Okay. All right, so having removed it, we would need to search the balance of the cluster for pairs that need to be moved back, filling the open spot just created in the middle of this cluster. Okay, so examining the balance of the cluster, okay, I look at this guy, and I see that its home bucket is 0, and so if this fellow is not moved here, well, then we would not locate it. Okay, all right, so this fellow is moved backwards. All right, then I move forwards in the cluster. There's another fellow in the cluster 45, a computer's home address. a home bucket, which is 11. And again, this open slot here is on the path from its home address to its present location. So this fellow needs to be moved back over there. Okay. All right, continuing, I see there's nobody else in the cluster, so I'm pretty much done with my resettling of this cluster. Okay. All right, yet another example, remove 29. Okay. So to remove an element, we need to first find the element of the pair and then take it out, and then we need to fix the cluster it was in. Okay. All right, so first task is to find the pair. To find the pair, you run the get algorithm. So you computed the home bucket. 29 mod 17 is a 12, so you start over here. And from here, you move forwards in the cluster till you locate it. Okay. All right, so we find it right over there. All right, once we take it out, we have a vacant spot in our table. And this happens to be in the middle of a cluster. So I need to check the rest of the cluster for people that need to be moved backwards. All right, so first I examine this part 11, and the home bucket is counterclockwise from my cluster, okay, which means that if I started at the home bucket and I moved forwards, I would incorrectly stop here looking for the 11 because this would have been determined as the end of the cluster. Okay. All right, so the 11 needs to be moved back. We move it back. All right, then I come to the 30. So over here, I compute its home bucket, which is 13, which is over here. Okay. So again, if I was searching for the 30, I would have started out here, then I would come here and have a problem because my cluster has come to an end. So to fix that, I move 30 backwards. All right, then I look at the next bucket in the cluster, which is bucket number 16, and the key there is 33. I compute the home bucket, 33 mod 17 is a 16, and that tells me that this fellow is not to be moved back. If you were to move it back, we'd have a problem because you'd be moving it counterclockwise from its home bucket. Okay. All right, but that doesn't end the picture. We still need to examine the balance of the cluster. Okay. So I look at 34. A 34 mod 17 is a 0, which means that this fellow is not supposed to be moved backwards. Okay, so this guy is not a candidate for this open slot, just like this was not a candidate for the open slot. Okay. Then I look at 0. 0 mod 17 is a 0. This is not a candidate for that open slot either. This one shouldn't be moved any further back than position 0, its home bucket. Then I look at 45. 45 mod 17 is an 11, and so 45 is a candidate for relocation to this spot. In fact, if we did not relocate 45 to this spot, we would fail to successfully find 45 if the next operation was get 45. Okay. All right, so 45 has to be moved from here to there. Okay. And performing that move, we get that situation. Okay. And then continuing with the cluster, we find we're at the cluster end. The next spot is empty, so there's nobody else that needs to be relocated. Okay. All right, so to do a remove, you really have to examine all of the cluster, okay, beginning from the spot that became vacant and moving clockwise up to the end of the cluster, looking for pairs that need to be relocated to the current empty spot that's somewhere in the middle of the cluster. Okay. Right, once you have successfully moved all these fellows backwards, you then have a correctly structured hash table. Okay. All right, so we've seen how to perform the three dictionary operations, get, put, and remove, using a linear open addressed hash table. Having done this, we then move on to examining the performance of these three methods. Okay. All right, if you're performing any of the operations, get, put, and remove, fundamental to a put and a remove is really a get. Okay, when you want to do a put, you're essentially searching for the presence of a pair that has the given key, because you have to verify duplicate. So you're going to search the home bucket cluster for the given key until you reach the end of the cluster, declare that the key isn't there, and then insert it. On the other hand, if you find it somewhere in the cluster, you can update the associated element. Okay. So the time to do a put is really the same as the time to do a get. In fact, it's the time to do an unsuccessful get if you're actually going to put in a new pair. If the get is successful, well, then you're going to update the associated element. Okay. To do a remove, well, to do a remove, we have to first locate the pair. If you don't locate the pair, okay, that is, there is no pair with a given key, well, then that's like an unsuccessful search. On the other hand, if you find a pair, it's like a successful search, you found it. But having done that, you need to look at the balance of the cluster for pairs that need to potentially be moved backwards to fill the current empty slot inside of the original cluster. And so the work you do is comparable to that done in an unsuccessful search. You still have to go to the end of the cluster. Okay. All right, so the complexity of the put and the remove is really the same as that of a get. And a get, we may distinguish between a successful get, one where you actually find a pair with the given key, and an unsuccessful get, one in which you don't find a pair with a given key. Okay. Now, the time to perform a get is really the size of the largest cluster that you have. Okay. So for example, here to find the 45, we would start out here and go through the entire cluster until we reach here. On the other hand, if you are looking for a 62, an unsuccessful search, we'll start at this point in the cluster and move all the way around until we fell off the cluster over here. Okay. So the size of the largest cluster actually determines the complexity of the get, and in turn determines the complexity of the put and the remove. Now, if the hash table was full, the cluster size would be n, n being the size of our table, and also being the number of pairs. Okay, so if the hash table were full, we would just have one big cluster out there. An unsuccessful get would require us to examine every single element in that cluster, taking order of n time. Okay, all right, so the worst case complexity of our dictionary operations would be order of n. And that happens when the table is full, you have a single cluster. Okay. All right, correction. I guess you could have order n even if the table is not full. So long as all of the pairs are in the same cluster, you would have to, you could potentially start your get operation at the beginning of the cluster and go all the way to the end, examining all n elements. All right, so the complexity is still order n, but it's not necessary for the table to be full. So long as all of your n pairs fall into the same cluster, you'll end up with an order n worst-case complexity. Okay. Now, the importance of hashing doesn't come from its having good worst-case performance. In fact, as we've seen, its worst-case performance is lousy. It's as bad as that for a linear list, an unordered linear list. So the value of hashing comes from the fact that its expected performance is exceptional. Its expected performance is order one. Okay. So let's take a look at the expected performance. Okay. The expected performance is measured in terms of the loading density of the table, where the loading density is defined as the ratio of n, the number of pairs in the table, divided by b, the number of buckets in the table. So for the example table that we just went through, our number of buckets is 17, and the number of pairs that we ended up putting in is 12, so the loading density of the table we had created is 12 over 17. Okay. Now, in giving the expected performance, we provide different numbers, one for the expected number of buckets examined when a successful search is performed. Okay. So, for example, if you're looking for a pair with key 45, then we'd examine this bucket, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Okay. So 9 pairs or 9 buckets are examined when you look for a 45. 1 bucket is examined when you look for 34. 2 buckets are examined when you look for 0. Okay. So S sub n is the expected number of buckets examined when you're looking for a key that is present in the table. Okay. Now, we could compute S sub n for this table by essentially looking at number of buckets to be examined when we're searching for 34, 0, 45, and then for each of the others, add up these quantities and divide by the number of keys, 12. Okay. The other quantity of interest is the expected number of buckets examined when you perform an unsuccessful search. So, for example, if you do an unsuccessful search for a key whose home bucket is 11, then you would look at all buckets in this cluster. And so the U value for keys whose home bucket is 11 would be the size of that cluster. Okay. On the other hand, if you're looking for, let's say, if you do a get 18, so then you would only look at these three fellows. Sorry, not get 18. If you do a get 51, then the home bucket would be 0. You'd look at this, this, and this. So the number of buckets examined in the unsuccessful search for 51 would be 3. Okay. So U sub n is the expected number of buckets that get examined in an unsuccessful search. And again, both quantities are for large values of n. Now, U sub n is important because the time for a put depends upon U sub n. As I said earlier, a put is really a successful put, meaning you actually end up adding a new pair, is an unsuccessful get followed by an insert into the end of the cluster. Similarly, we noted that the time for a remove is really about the same as the time for an unsuccessful get, because when you find what you're removing, you still have to go to the end of the cluster relocating pairs. Okay. So U sub n gives us a good idea of what a put and a remove are going to cost. It also tells us what an unsuccessful search is going to cost. And then S sub n tells us what a successful search will cost. Okay. Okay. Now, we're not going to go through the analysis here, but one can show that for large n, the value of S sub n is given approximately by this formula here, and the value of U sub n is given approximately by that formula over there. Okay. Now, the loading density for a linear open address hash table is somewhere between 0 and 1. What 1 would mean the table is full, and 0 would mean the table is empty. Right, here are some comparative values. If you're operating a hash table so that its loading density is 1/2, okay, so only half the buckets are occupied, then the expected value of S sub n is 1.5. So successful searches are quite fast. On the average, you only look at 1.5 buckets in a successful search. Unsuccessful searches, and in turn puts and gets, are also quite fast. Sorry, puts and removes are also quite fast, taking about 2.5 comparisons. Okay. Now, when you operate at a loading density of about 0.75, things are still quite reasonable. It's 2.5 bucket comparisons for a successful search, and 8.5 for an unsuccessful search, and also for a put and a remove. Things get somewhat uncomfortable when you get to point 9. A successful search is still fairly good, 5.5 compares, or bucket examinations, but an unsuccessful search, and in turn a put and a remove, begins to take an unacceptable amount of work. You got to look at about 50 buckets. Okay. So if you're using linear open addressing, then you certainly don't want to be in the 0.9 range. Things get much worse if you go to 0.95 or 0.99. Even at 0.75, you may begin to get uncomfortable with the 8 bucket examinations over here. And you really want to operate at alphas that are somewhat smaller. Okay. So 0.75 is about the highest loading density you may want to operate at. Okay. All right, so when you're designing a hash table, you may be given the performance requirements and be asked to determine the maximum loading density under which you can perform, or you may, for example, be told that a successful search should make no more than 10 comparisons in the expected case. And given that information, we can get a bound on alpha. Okay. So we make use of the formula for expected number of buckets examined in a successful search. That's given to us to be 10, so you plug 10 in, solve this for alpha, and you get that your loading density should not be more than 18 over 19. Okay. Now, you may also be told that an unsuccessful search should not examine more than 13 buckets in the expected case, and you plug that into the formula for expected value of u sub n, so you put u sub n equal to 13 and solve for alpha. And that works out to 4 over 5. Okay. So if the performance requirement is successful searches no more than 10 bucket examinations expected, and unsuccessful searches no more than 13 in the expected case, well, then we want to take the smaller of these two loading densities that would satisfy both these conditions. Okay. So we would want to operate at a loading density of 4 over 5 or 0.8. So long as your loading density doesn't exceed 0.8, we would meet both of these performance requirements. Okay. All right, so in a hash table design, you could start with a performance requirement that's placed on you. Successful searches, no more than so many buckets. Unsuccessful searches, no more than so many bucket exams. And then you can come up with a bound on the loading density, alpha. Okay. All right, once you have this, then you can use this in your table design. If you're working in a mode where you're able to resize the table. Okay. So people are inserting items into the table. Once the loading density exceeds the threshold you've computed, which is 4 over 5 or 0.8 in our example, well, then what you do is you double the size of the table. Okay. And once you double the size of the table, the loading density drops from 4 over 5 to 2 over 5. Then you can continue to add items. Again, when it becomes 4 over 5, you again double the size of the table. Okay. All right, the other mode in which one might operate is you aren't able to increase the size of the table dynamically. This is typically something that would happen if you know ahead of time what the size or the largest number of pairs you're going to be keeping in the table, in which case what you would do is you would simply compute the size of the table that's needed to assure that your loading density doesn't exceed the threshold, in this case 0.8. Okay. So if I know that I will never have more than 1,000 pairs in the table, then the loading density has to be at most 0.8 or 4 over 5. I use this. Okay, loading density is n over b. N is 1,000. B is 4 over, loading density is 4 over 5. So B becomes N times 1 over alpha, which is 1,250. So that tells me that I need to start with a table whose size is at least 1,250, and I pick maybe a prime number or an odd number with no prime divisors smaller than 20. That's at least equal to 1,250. Okay. So that would be the other way to design your table. Well, let's look at the alternative to linear open addressing. And in the alternative, each bucket is going to keep a linear list of synonyms rather than just a single pair. Okay. Now, here too, we have an option. The linear list may contain the pairs in sorted order of key, assuming again that the keys are sortable, or they may not be sorted by key. Okay. Right, the linear list could be an array linear list or a chain. Our examples are going to assume it is a chain. All right, further, we're going to assume that the chains we're maintaining happen to be sorted. Okay. So if we take a look at our example key set from the linear probing example, okay, then we had these, I guess it was probably 12 keys or whatever. Yeah, looks like we've got 12 keys. So these are the 12 keys that have to go in. So we'll use the same hash function, division by 17. And we're going to also use a hash table of the same size, which is 17. So there's 17 buckets in there. Okay. And going through the same exercise we went through maybe a half hour ago, we could start placing these elements into, or these pairs, into the appropriate linear lists. Okay. Then all the pairs for which the keys have a home bucket of 0, namely keys are 0 and 34 in our example, they go into the linear list stored in home bucket 0. All pairs for which the home bucket is 6 go into the linear list for bucket 6. And then those with 7 go here. Those with home bucket 11, in our example there were 3 of them, they get into the linear list for bucket 11, and so on. Okay. All right, so when you have this arrangement, the clusters tend to be smaller. The maximum size of a cluster equals the largest number of synonyms that you have. Okay. When you have linear open addressing, we saw that a cluster could contain keys that weren't synonyms. Here, each cluster, namely a linear list, contains only keys that are synonyms, and so the cluster sizes tend to be smaller. Okay. So here, if we are going to do a get 45, I would compute the home bucket, get into this linear list, and then search the linear list for somebody with key 45, and I'll be comparing only with keys that actually are synonyms of 45. Okay. Now, the other nice thing about having a sorted list like this is you don't have to go till the end of the list to determine that something is not present. In the case of linear open addressing, you always have to go to the end of a cluster. Here, you don't have to do that. If you're looking for someone whose key lies between two consecutive keys in your thing, you can stop. Okay. So, for example, over here, if I'm trying to do a get 17, I compute the home bucket, which is 0. I compare with this fellow, the 17 is bigger. So there's still a potential that 17 is in this list because it's an ascending ordered list. I come here and I compare with 34, and since 17 is smaller than 34, I know that it's not present in the list, and there's no need to examine the rest of it. And in this case, of course, there is no rest of it. This is the end. But potentially, you could have several other people on this list out here, and looking for a 17, we don't have to go beyond this spot. If you're doing a put, okay. So if you want to put a 17 in, you first do a get. You come up to here, you find there's no 17. You can break this pointer here and insert right over at this spot. Okay. If you're doing a remove, for example, you're doing a remove 28, you search for the 28, and then you change the pointer from the fellow before you so that it goes over there. Okay. So standard chain operations in this case. Okay. All right, so the alternative to linear open addressing is to maintain a linear list in each bucket. The linear list contains all synonyms, that is, all keys or all pairs whose keys have that bucket as its home address. Okay. The linear list may be maintained in a sorted fashion or in an unsorted fashion. In the example here, our linear list is a chain. It could have been an array linear list. And in the example here, it is an ordered linear list. Okay. Performing the operations of get, put, and remove are fairly straightforward, since we've already seen how to do these or similar operations on a chain. Okay. All right, so we really won't go through the codes. I'll let you look at the codes for these things from the book. All right, if we look at the expected performance here, okay. Again, before expected, we could again note that here too, the worst case performance is order of n. It's entirely possible that all of the n pairs you have keys that all have the same home bucket, and therefore all of your n pairs are sitting on the same linear list. Okay. All right, so the worst case is still order n, but again, as I said earlier, hashing isn't popular because it has a good worst case performance. Hashing is a popular scheme because its expected performance is exceptional, and that expected performance is actually observed in real life. All right, so when you use linear lists, whether it's a chain or an array linear list, the expected length of a linear list is the loading density alpha, okay? Because you expect that the items will distribute uniformly, assuming you're using a uniform hash function, that you your n items will distribute uniformly across the n, across your b buckets. So the expected number of items in a linear list is n divided by b, which is the loading density. Okay. All right, so the expected chain length in this case, or in general, the expected linear list length is the loading density alpha. Now, when you have sorted lists or sorted chains in our example, you expect to go only about halfway down the chain to find what you're looking for. So roughly speaking, you're looking at about alpha over two comparisons that will be done. Okay. If you do a more careful analysis, it'll work out to be more like 1 plus alpha over 2. Okay. For an unsuccessful search, if the loading density is smaller than 1, then U sub n is going to be at most the loading density. You can do a more careful analysis for the case where loading density is more than 1. And an unsuccessful search works out to take about 1 plus alpha over 2 comparisons with keys in the table. Okay. All right, these numbers are quite a bit better than those for linear open addressing. If you put in an alpha of 1, for example, S sub n works out to be about 1.5, and U sub n is also 1.5. All right, finally, Java has a hash table implementation. It's in its package, java.util, and the name is as given here. It's hash table. Okay, not too surprising that they would call it that. Okay, and if you look at this implementation, basically what they have is a hash table in which each bucket is a linear list, but that linear list is implemented as an unsorted chain rather than a sorted chain in our example. If you create a hash table, then the default size or length of the hash table that you begin with is 101. You could certainly, they have constructors which allow you to start with different lengths, so you could start with 205 if you wanted instead of 101. But if you don't provide an initial length for your table, then Java would default into a table whose length is 101, which also means that the divisor that is used is 101. So Java's hash table implementation does use division to map into a home bucket. Okay. Also, the default loading density that's used as a threshold in Java is 0.75. You certainly have the option of using a different loading density. So they have a constructor which will allow you to specify the loading density under which you want to operate. So, for example, you could work with a loading density of 0.5 if you preferred. Okay. And then what Java does is whenever the loading density exceeds the threshold provided, okay, which is the default is 0.75, it would roughly double the size of the table, which means that the new table would be would have a length that is two times the old number of buckets plus one. Okay. Again, this allows you to stay with an odd divisor. As we noted in our last lecture, it's desirable not to use divisors that are even numbers. You want them to be odd at a minimum. Of course, ideally, you'd like them to be prime. But when you're going into dynamic resizing, it's kind of hard to be computing appropriate prime numbers on the fly. And so Java uses a fairly simple strategy, which says you maintain hash table lengths and therefore divisors that are always odd numbers. Okay. Now, when you do resize the hash table, you need to go through the table, you need to collect all of your pairs, and you need to rehash them. You have to recompute the home buckets and put them into the proper chains. Okay. So it's a fairly involved or time-consuming process to do the resizing here. It's not just a matter of copying a bunch of pointers. You do have to recompute home buckets because the divisor has changed, and that means you have to essentially do n puts all over again into the new table. Okay, so I guess that kind of concludes our discussion on hash tables. In the next lecture, we'll take a look at an application of hash tables. Okay, thank you.